Well, you know what? This is a tough parable. And it's tough on a lot of levels. For one thing, it's challenging because the point, truthfully, is a little bit elusive. It raises more questions than answers. It's kind of like watching the TV show Lost. At the end of it, you're thinking, what just happened? What's going on here? First of all, notice that this parable, which features both heaven and hell, it doesn't say anything at all about faith. There's no reference to Lazarus, the beggar, having faith, and yet he ends up at Father Abraham's side in heaven. Is that simply a reminder of the deep and desperate love that God has for the outcast and the marginalized? On the other side, though, there's also no reference to the rich man's lack of faith. I mean, you sort of have to ask, what did he do to end up in hell? Was it just having a lot of money? Is that the problem? There's a tension here, and we don't know the answers for sure. This little parable just doesn't fit into clean boxes. The passage doesn't say anything at all about belief. It doesn't mention correct doctrine. It doesn't say anything about praying a certain prayer so that you receive salvation by the fruit of that prayer. In fact, it doesn't say anything about all of the things that we tend to associate with heaven and hell. So we're kind of left with one clear implication. There's one thing that we can say pretty confidently. This guy, this rich man, loved himself and he loved his stuff more than he loved the beggar at the gate. Well, I don't know if you're anything like me, it sort of begs the next question, which is, well, how much is enough? I mean, how much is required? How much should the rich man have given? What did he need to do for Lazarus in order to end up in a different place? Fascinating question. And I kind of want to ask you, I mean, what should we give? Anybody want to dare an answer? There's no right or wrong answer necessarily. How much? How much should we hold ourselves to, challenge ourselves to? When is enough? When it comes to giving or tithing, is there a target? Well, here's my answer. It's the wrong question. I don't think that's the point. And I'm not just saying that to let you off the hook, because I think the point is even harder than a statistic or a percentage point. If you press me for an answer, if you really insist, come on, give me a number. Give me something I can shoot for. I'll refer you to the story of the rich young ruler who comes to Jesus and says, what must I do to inherit eternal life? And Jesus says, well, obey the commands. And he says, I've done that. Am I good? What else? And Jesus says, sell everything. Sell your possessions and give it to the poor. And the man goes away sad because he's got a lot. How much does God want us to give? How about all of it? I genuinely don't believe that Jesus tells this story to try to persuade us to give more in order to stay out of hell. I don't think that's the point. You see, if our response to the beggar at the gate, if our generosity, our giving, if it just comes out of a desire to achieve a certain percentage point, then we've completely missed the point. Percentages, rules, requirements, just not the way of Jesus. The way of Jesus is all about realigning our heart. It's about radically shifting the way we see, the way we understand the world and our part in it. So I want to introduce you to a new word, or introduce a new word to the conversation to describe what I think is happening between the rich man and Lazarus. The word is posture. By posture, what I mean is the shape and the direction and the focus of our heart and our eyes and yes, even our bodies. The rich man in our story this morning, he has an inward posture, you might say. Here's what I mean. His heart and his desires, the longings of his heart, they're self-centered. Jesus says that he lives lavishly every day. You can almost picture him coming home from work after a hard day on his chariot, and he pulls into the gate, and the gate swings shut behind him, and he's got one thing on his mind, getting inside his castle where he can enjoy the fruit of his labor, where he can satisfy his longing for comfort and enjoy the things that he's earned, the things that are his. Nothing about cheating or evil behavior. There's no dishonesty there. It's simply that the direction of his heart is inward. The focus of his heart is self. His eyes see not the need outside the gate, but the comfort and the safety and the enjoyment of his life inside the gate. Here's the thing. You can give away 5, 10, 15% of your income and still have a self-focused inward posture. I think Jesus tells this story to challenge us to change our posture. It's not about how much we give. It's about our heart. First of all, our heart towards our stuff. It's the way that we think about our own comfort and our home and our time and our personally gratifying way of life. But just as much, it's about our heart towards our neighbor, whether that's a literal beggar at the door or the spiritually poor neighbor next door. Jesus is challenging us in this story to have an other focused posture. A posture in which we consider everything we do, everywhere we go, everything that we have as not being for our own sake or our own pleasure, but being for the sake of our neighbor. This should sound familiar. Consider yourselves less important than the other, Paul says. Love your neighbor as yourself, Jesus says. God tells Abraham, who shows up in this story, I'm going to bless you so that you can be a blessing to many nations. Instead of an inward posture in which we generally consider our stuff ours, what if we adopted a different posture? An outward posture in which we considered everything we have and everything we do and everywhere we go for others' sake. What if we recognized that we are blessed in order to be a blessing? To help flesh out this kind of vague idea of posture, I want to paint a few pictures for you, pictures of what an outward, other-shaped posture might look like. Let's imagine a husband and a wife who decide they want to go out for dinner. They really enjoy good food, and there's great restaurants here in town. Most folks would ask the next question, what do you feel like tonight? But this couple instead asks, which restaurant are we most likely to run into one of those families we've been trying to connect with so that we can love them into the family of God? For them, the act of eating out, which is, hey, let's just be honest, enjoying the good things of life, but the act of eating out becomes an other-focused event. It's an outward posture. How about this? A woman who works somewhere downtown gets a break every day and goes to the same coffee shop. There's three or four down there, lots to choose from, but she goes to the same coffee shop every day. and orders the same thing so that she can get to know the barista behind the counter. Get to know her and share life, find out what's going on, so that maybe, she prays, someday she'll be able to invite that barista into her life and maybe even into her home so that she can tell that person about the way that Jesus healed her. Her coffee break becomes an other-focused event. That's an outward posture. As a little aside, since I've been thinking about this idea of posture, I've become really actually painfully aware of how most of us, most of the time, treat waiters and waitresses. I've sat there in restaurants and watched people be served by a waiter and never once through an entire meal make eye contact. That waiter's there to serve me, to meet my needs. Here's what I'll have. Here's my credit card. Thank you very much. But since I've started to think about this, I sit down at the table and the waitress comes up and I want to know, what's going on in your life? What do you struggle with? Where do you find guidance for life? Where do you seek truth? What's your community like? The more I think about this, I find myself going to the same places, not just because I like the pad thai, but because I feel my heart growing for the lunchtime waitress who now knows what I order every time. I'm trying to have an outward posture. Okay, more stories. A family looks around their house, and they know they've got more space than they really need, and then they hear about all the orphans in China, and they decide, even as their own daughter's entering high school, we're going to adopt one and bring her into our home. It's an outward, other-focused posture. There's a man who's super busy, got two busy kids. He and his wife both work full-time. Family time is a premium. There's never enough of it. But this man who loves the outdoors and has a strong sense of morals and values gives up hours every week to be the pack leader for his son's Cub Scout troop. That's an outward posture. Family time becomes an other-focused opportunity. There's a family that has recently become empty nesters. And they hear about a teenager who's gotten pregnant and is living on the streets. They got plenty of room. They've got the time and the resources. They invite her to move in to their home so they can help her learn how to take care of herself and help her prepare to be a mom who can make it. And they do this in spite of what their neighbors think about a homeless woman moving in next door. Again, their home becomes other-focused. That's life with an outward posture. Okay, so it's not about giving just to meet a goal. But sometimes a goal can help us accomplish things that we might not otherwise have the willpower to do. So if you're one of those people who wants a simple answer, just give me a number. Okay, here's a number for you. There's a woman who's a professor at the university. She's married. Her husband works full-time also. And they've chosen to live in a small downtown apartment. They eat out seldomly. They live simply so that they can give away as much as they possibly can. They've actually set a goal to give away 33% of their income, a third of their income, to give it away. You'll get a chance to meet that couple during Advent. That is an outward posture. Life arranged for the sake of others. An outward posture, in a nutshell, means that in every part of our life, in every aspect of what we have, in everything that we do, everywhere we go, we are looking outward towards others, looking for opportunities to bless them, to care for them, to reach out to them, to love them. My basement becomes a tool to bless and reach out to others. My backyard becomes a location where I can think about my neighbor instead of my own, a place to swing my golf clubs. The choices I make not just for me, but to enable me to reach out to others more and more. It's about how my decisions affect my ability to have an outward posture towards others. That is the outward posture that I think this story challenges us to. Now, let me be honest. This is not easy. I know it. You can't just flip a switch and suddenly have an outward posture. You can't just one day decide, I'm going to be outward. Even as I stood here and sang this morning, I looked across at my wife and knew I'm going to have a chat when we get home about having an outward posture. At some point, you just got to start doing it. At some point, we just got to decide, my life is not my own. It belongs to God. And so, I'm going to give it back to Him. And I'm going to use these things, these parts of my life, every part, for the sake of the kingdom. Here's my challenge. Pick one. Pick one area. I don't have a preference. I don't know what it is. Your car, your spare time, your favorite restaurant. I don't know. Pick one area of your life and begin to ask God, what would it look like, God, for me to have an outward posture in this place? Pick one. What would it look like? Maybe it's your home. What would it look like, God, for my home to be the center of my outward posture towards the world? What would it look like for my time and my resources not to be for my own comfort, but for the sake of God's kingdom? We're about to move into a season in which our culture will be bombarding us with messages about the things that we need, the things we ought to have. As we enter that season together, I pray that stories like these will help us to have a posture that's straight and focused on Christ. May we learn to hold on to ourselves and our things a little more lightly so that our arms and hands are free to reach out to others. May your heart know how richly God has blessed you. And may you be a blessing. I'm going to pray, and then we're going to sing a bit. And while we're singing, we're going to pass the offering. And if you've got something to contribute to the sake of our mission and our life together, you'll have a chance. But when that bowl passes, we do this a lot. I just want to ask you to hold that bowl for just a second as a symbol of giving yourself to God. Whatever that one area is, if you can think of it, if you already know, offer that to God as the bowl touches your hands. God, have this area of my life. May it be for your sake and for others' sake. Let's pray.